One Pacifica Performance Showcase, and I'll be rerunning my very special interview with the great late Leon Russell. So stay tuned for Arts and Review. And welcome to Arts in Review. And for those of you just joining us, have a happy day after Thanksgiving. Hope you got a holiday weekend and that you can stay home and chill a little bit. I'm in studio with two wonderful guests, Sharon Charth and Pamela Dunlap. They are starring in Waiting for Grace, which is an award-winning comedy, I guess comedy, drama, a little bit of everything, like life. It's about relationships, love, marriage. What else is there? Life.
It's a dramedy.
It's a dramedy. Yeah. You know, it's funny because they were really pushing dramedy for a while, and that term just never kind of went anywhere. It was kind of too bad because we have such a need to stick labels on things. But as we know, life ain't like that. So, Sharon,
yes.
You are the playwright of this wonderful play.
Right.
I guess the first question, and we'll get into what it's about, but I would imagine this is rather autobiographical.
Loosely autobiographical, yes, yes.
Well, I think given that, when people go to see it, they will certainly find many aspects of their own lives that are very recognizable, especially women and women of a certain age who've kind of been there, done that. You'll find a lot to laugh at and think about. How did this come about? Talk a little bit about your background as a playwright and as an actress, and then how it evolved to this current project.
Uh-huh. Well, first of all, I was an actor in New York, and Pamela and I had worked in New York years ago at Circle Repertory Theater Company. And when I first moved out here to Los Angeles, the first job I had was at the Old Globe Theater doing the Hank Williams musical.
Oh, Lost Highway?
Lost Highway, very good. And we were about 3 weeks into the show, and my co-star turned around, and I don't know how this happened, but he punched me in the jaw by mistake. It was a total accident, and my jaw went across my face like a typewriter thing, you know. And I finished the show. Luckily, it was a Sunday night. I put ice on it, drove back up to Los Angeles that night, because that was down in San Diego, and they put it back in place. I finished the run of the show, which was, I think, another 2 weeks, maybe three. And then for the next 10 years, they were putting my jaw back in place because it was completely dislocated. And I was told by the doctors, you got to find another career because your jaw is going to stick in place either one way or another, open or shut. And anyway, so I started writing. My family's full of journalists. I started writing children's books, nonfiction children's books about endangered animals mostly. And one day I said, I was out of the business, completely out of the business. And I sat down and started typing about what was going on in my life, which was really I wanted to get married, and I couldn't. And it was just, you know, one relationship after another that fell apart, and I didn't understand it. So I started writing it, and we have this great story that I'll let Pamela tell, because this is the first time. I mean, this was, and I've written many plays since, but this was the very first one. And so I had only the first act. And we went to Pacific Resident Theater to do a reading of it. And we invited people, and we had great, you know, circle rep actors. And do you want to tell the story?
Well, I don't remember that the first reading as being the one at Pacific Resident Theater. I remember the first reading being the one at your house in Pasadena.
Oh, no. This was the one at Pacific Resident Theater. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And Well, so
in any event.
In any event. So what happened was I just gave the script to all my Circle Rep friends, and they all came in to read. And after the reading, it had gone very well, but it was just a one act. And Pamela came up to me and she said, "Sharon, you know, I was coming here because I thought, oh, dear Sharon, she thinks she can write a play. Oh, dear Sharon. Okay, well, you know what? I'm going to support her, and I'm going to do this reading." She said, "What? I can't believe the kind of response we got." So it was, you know, that was a long time ago.
Well,
and
what
very
was interesting
exciting
to me about it was how the material leapt off the page. In reading it, it didn't seem at all good to me. I did. I thought, isn't this sweet? Well, and we'll all show up. We're all friends of hers from Circle, and we'll all show up, mm-hmm. and we'll read it for her, and she will see the error of her ways, and she will have gotten this off of her chest, and then perhaps she'll be able to go on and write something worthwhile. Mm-hmm. So it was, you know, it was like a mercy call to go and read the play for
Charlotte.
Like Charlotte.
A good friend.
Like a good friend. And I'm sitting there, and like within 15 seconds, I'm going, oh, my God, it plays like gangbusters. This is awesome. So that's
Well, and actually, I didn't really give you a proper introduction either, Pamela, because I knew you, of course, as an actress in TV and film, but most recently on Mad Men, which I was a huge fan of. And we actually met at a wonderful event to celebrate the 40th anniversary of LA Theater
That's
Works,
right.
Our wonderful LA Theater Works, which, by the way, I neglected to say the play that we're running tonight, because we carry LA Theater Works here on KPFK, will be the first half of Lost in Yonkers, which is the wonderful Neil Simon play. So tune in from 9 to 10 tonight for the first half of Lost in Yonkers. Just wanted to get that in.
Good.
And we had talked about, because I'm such a fan of Mad Men, and you were on that show. I thought, oh, we've got to have you on. And then there was a web series that you were involved with,
Kittens in a Cage.
Kittens in a Cage. And we said, okay, we'll talk about that. And you know, here we are now, finally, and talking about this current project that you're involved with. So after the reading, then
yes,
then what happened?
Then we did readings and workshops and readings and workshops.
Play competition.
We won the collaboration award.
That's
from
right.
The
Women in Film and Women in Theater and Film and Television.
Women in some kind of art.
Yeah, yes, yeah. Yes. An arts.
In New York City.
Yes, an arts and media nonprofit organization. And we won a collaboration award for collaborating on the material.
And it won a Best New American Play from the Firehouse Theater Company, and it's been a long time of workshops and readings, and Pamela has been behind me the whole time and has said, "You've got to produce this yourself. Do it yourself. Yeah." And I kept saying,
"Well, it wasn't
Pamela,
getting produced. It wasn't getting
done. I'm an actor. I don't know how to produce anything." And you know, and anyway, so I finally done it. Just because,
and
it's time.
And it is running. I just wanted to get this in again. It is at the Odyssey through December 11th. And we will be doing a ticket giveaway, momentarily for this. But I want to talk about the play itself because I was pleasantly surprised as well. I mean, I've been in a lot of plays in my time. And life is about relationships. Life is about relationships and communication, in my opinion. So we see a lot of the evolution of your character, Grace, through the cosmic learning game, I guess, of relationships. But what fascinated me was through all the travails, and you have friends, and you have your current dates and lovers and relatives and various people that populate this play, and you do play multiple roles. Pamela plays multiple roles. But Happily Ever After starts an intermission, in my opinion, which I really loved. I love the fact that a guy finally comes along, that it's very apparent that this is the one. And not just in a, you know, kind of idealistic, oh, I've found Mr. Right kind of thing. But really, you know, and the audience knows right away because of the dynamic between the two of you. But that's when it really begins. That's when the work begins on a substantive relationship.
That's right.
That's when happiness begins and travails begin. And
that's right.
But it's different than all that went before.
Yes.
So maybe you can talk about that, of what differentiates, I don't want to say the frogs from the princes, but the ones that you know aren't right. Although at the time, you don't know that they're not right.
No, you think they're right. You know, I think part, I mean, that part of it is true. I met, my husband is Mark Bryan, who wrote The Artist's Way with Julia Cameron, co-created that, and other things. You know, he was on Oprah and stuff. And we're doing Thursday night wine parties,
yes.
Ladies' Nights Out.
Yes.
On
please
Thursday
mention that.
Night.
Yeah.
Yes. And you get, in addition to getting to see the wonderful play and the wonderful performance by Miss Charth, you also get to have a glass of wine and a chit-chat with Mark Bryan. He will be there every Thursday night. You can assail him with all of your questions.
Well, and he's and one of the characters that you play Grace's mother and
yes.
friend and all that, but you also play a coach.
I do indeed.
And I really took from a lot of the things that your character says some pearls of wisdom. And I think the one that stood out for me was when your character says you need to commit to the relationship,
yeah.
not the person,
yeah.
because the person will always let you down because they're human.
That's right.
And when things do start to get a little rocky, you realize the question isn't, do I love this person? The question is, am I willing to commit to making this relationship work? And if there's one pearl of wisdom that you come away with, for me, that's it.
I am so happy that you really heard
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
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 Because really that, I mean, we've been married now a long time and I'm telling you, you know, there are times when, and I remember that
mm-hmm.
because that is so important. Commit to the relationship itself,
mm-hmm.
not the man.
Mm-hmm.
And because we're all human. I'm going to disappoint him. He's going to disappoint me. It's just going to happen. And, but you know, when I was looking, I didn't know that was going to be the case. I thought there really was some perfect guy out there.
Mm-hmm.
And there is, and I've got him.
Yeah, and that it is an evolution. It is a,
yes.
a growing together, but also the rocky stuff does lend itself to the greater intimacy, to the greater knowing
working
of
through
that
it.
Person.
Working
yes.
through it.
So you've got, Pamela, you've got some of the greatest lines
I
in
do,
the whole
don't
play.
I. Thank you, Sharon. I do indeed. I do indeed. You know, but and my character even says it. It's one of the things that's so very, I think, very much the matter with the world today. People are not committing to the relationship. And so when the person lets them down eventually, like they always will, they talk the relationship out.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's why previous generations, they understood that. It was culturally ingrained in them that this was something, this
yep.
was the commitment you were making. You were making the commitment to the relationship. And that's why there were so fewer divorces
yeah,
and breakups.
Yeah, because it's like 50% now.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
on a good day.
Right.
I want to do a little ticket giveaway.
Please do.
We have a few pairs of tickets for Waiting for Grace at the Odyssey running through December 11th, and I highly urge people to get out and see it. If you're a listener subscriber and you haven't won anything in the last couple of months, call 818-985-5735. I want to play a little music here. This is one of the songs that you use in your great selection of wonderful romance longing for love songs, and it's Dusty Springfield's Wishin' and Hopin'. Just one of the best songs ever by the great Dusty Springfield. Mm-hmm. So we'll listen to that, do a little giveaway, and then we'll come back and talk a little bit more about
okay.
the male-female dynamic.
And praying, planning, and dreaming each night of his charms that won't get you into his arms. So if you're looking to find love, you can share love him, yeah, just do it. And after you do, you will be his. You will be his. You will be his.
Ah, the great Dusty Springfield. Oh, no one like her. And I love how that song doesn't even fade out at the end. It just comes to an end saying, you will be his. And that's all there is to it. So many great songs in this musical, pre-show music and intermission music. And that, of course, is one of the best. One of the things I wanted to talk about was how your character, Pamela, talks a lot about the feminine energy and the need to be receptive.
Yes.
And I think that's something that a lot of us don't hear, men and women, that sort of magnetic energy that allows you to receive, not only to assimilate your life experience so that you get what you're experiencing, you get the lesson, but also to receive gifts, to receive love, to receive. And we associate that, I think, erroneously with being passive. And it's not. I think it's kind of the ultimate appreciation of those pearls of wisdom, of those gifts. Because if you can't accept them and assimilate them, then you don't get it. You move on to the next thing because our dynamic energy is ready to roll for the next thing. So it really brings about the issue. Your character is always telling Grace, you know, to just listen, you know, and it doesn't mean you sit there, you know, batting your eyelashes and, you know, whatever you say, dear. It means you're really listening and being an active partner in that regard. So I wanted to talk about this, really, this need I feel that we have in this society for that balance of the masculine and feminine energy, because the person you found in the play as Grace is kind of a new age sensitive guy, you know. He's in touch with that feminine side of him, it seems to me. And we were talking in the break, I just had John Densmore on to talk about this Robert Bly film, 1,000 Years of Joy. And he was instrumental in starting the men's movement. And initially there was a backlash because feminists thought, well, you know, what do you men need? You've had the white male privilege, you know. And the point was that men needed to become in touch with that inner feminine. They needed to come in touch with their manhood in the sense of not macho, but in the sense of balancing that masculine feminine energy. And I think that's also addressed in your play.
Yes.
So maybe you can talk about that, because it seems to me in any successful relationship, you've got to have a balance in your dynamic with your partner. You know, even if the man is more receptive, or
right,
the woman is more dynamic, it's still right, a balancing of those energies.
Right. One of the things in the play is when he gives gifts, and big gifts, Grace is like, oh my God, can't receive, receive, never did. You know, I remember a therapist once saying to me, you know, you always go for the guy who leans against the walls. They lean against the walls and then they lean against you. And those were all the guys that are in Act One. And then I found this other guy who stood up straight and didn't lean against the wall. But the receiving, you know, her ability to receive is really hard. That's why the coach keeps saying, say yes, yes, thank you. You know, it's like, oh my God, you know, because she can't do it.
I love that yes, thank you, because I immediately start, you know, the number one rule in improv is yes and, because otherwise you kill the scene.
Yeah.
So
kill the relationship.
Yeah, you kill the relationship.
I don't need that.
Take away your gift. And you really are kind of stomping on their energy, where he's, I just need to do this. It's an expression of my love.
Yes.
But then we come to find out that it's not just about the gift. You know, it's not about the gift.
Right.
It's about the giving and the receiving.
Mm-hmm. So, exactly.
Yeah. Now, what sort of pearls of wisdom, I guess, in the process of doing this and seeing this play evolve. What have you both come away with in terms of, you know, not only audience reaction, but things that you've sort of learned in your process of going through this?
I certainly hear the lines throughout my day. I can't think of a specific event, but, you know, something will happen, something will be said, and a line from Sharon's play will resonate. I suddenly, oh, yeah, it's just like what Sharon's talking about in the play.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the things that I wanted to bring up, that it's also mentioned that a woman can be the masculine energy in a relationship, that there is nothing wrong with that.
Mm-hmm. That's
and
right.
The man can be the feminine
mm-hmm.
energy.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that you need to figure out
right.
who is what.
Right.
I mean, my character even says it's a waltz, not a slam dance. If you can't figure those things out, you're stepping on one another's toes.
Mm.
And there are plenty of more masculine, energized women out there in the world. And there's nothing the matter with that. They just need to find the right mate for themselves, the right, you know, as we're talking about female relationships.
And it also brings up the issue of when he does start to, some of his projects and deals kind of go south, things need to work themselves out, and his immediate response is, you know, we gotta sell the car, you gotta get a job, we gotta do this. And of course it's a very masculine way of dealing with it, but we also know that for men, at least in the past, and I think particularly previous generations, that having the job and being the provider is a major part of their masculinity and of their sense of themselves as a man. So when that goes away or that's jeopardized, it does kind of move into a little fear flight. Oh my God, we got to fix this.
Yes.
And your character has an interesting response to that, because he has one solution for the problem and you have another solution for the problem. I mean, in the sense of letting him know, I don't need the car. I don't need
yes.
the this.
Yes.
And all these great things we were planning, let's just, you know, postpone them or do them a different way. You know,
right.
there are creative options here, I guess.
Right. But I really love what the coach says at that juncture in the road, that so many of us have a tendency to do this. Things are not going well for him, and so we're going to step in and we're going to help. We're going to fix it. We're going to
yes.
help fix it.
Mm-hmm.
We're
going to,
okay, I can pay. I can. And mm-hmm. That's one of the things that I love. A takeaway from the play is that when it starts to go south, when it starts to get difficult, just hang on and yeah. maintain that feminine energy and don't try to step in there and fix it. Let him figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
Let him deal with it.
Or let him know that
that you trust
the relationship isn't about the Beamer, you know?
That's right.
We're going to have to wrap it up. I'm so sorry to say, because when you're talking about relationships, you could just talk forever. But I wanted to briefly mention the other cast members and the team on this one.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Our director is Lee Costello.
Yeah. Wonderfully done, by the way.
Yes. Let's see. Jeff
LeBeau. Jeff LeBeau. Wonderful actor.
And Bob Telford.
Bob Telford.
Oh, and Lily Knight.
Lily Knight.
Because we all worked together in
New York City. And on another new play called The Early Girl at
That's
Circle
right.
Rep.
Yeah,
Sharon
right.
and Lily and I. And then Lily and I and Lee Costello worked on another play at Circle Rep called Musical Comedy Murders of 1940, which went on to Broadway.
Yes.
It's a wonderful group of actors. And it's kind of hard to keep them all straight because they play multiple roles. They play a lot of different people.
Yes.
And I just do want to end up saying
Todd Babcock. We didn't mention Todd.
Yeah, very, very important. So again, the play is Waiting for Grace. It stars Sharon Sharth, the playwright, as well. Pamela Dunlap, who you know from so many wonderful things, not the least of which, as I looked on IMDb, was Gunsmoke. Oh my God.
Yes, indeed. Yes.
I got a kick out of that. You find out the funniest things sometimes. So suffice it to say, it's well worth seeing. You'll learn a lot. You'll find a lot to identify with. I'm going to go out with a little Dusty Springfield again. But this one is I Only Want to Be With You. And we'll be back for the second half of the show and my tribute to the late, great Leon Russell.
me vestía como japonés y me llevaba, yo tenía que llevar platos.
I was even dressed up in Japanese clothing, and I had to take out dishes. At the beginning, I was not used to this, and the soups would be shaking. I even would cause accidents. The soups would end up on the floor. The most challenging part is to get over your nerves, realizing that you're rubbing elbows with famous artists and you feel, like, uncomfortable.
For those of us sitting in a restaurant eating, we may not be aware of what it takes to make our meal possible. What's it really like for those working behind the kitchen door? Join us this week as we talk with Heriberto Zamora, who worked in the kitchen of Urasawa, one of the most expensive restaurants in the country.
From the UCLA Labor Center and KPFK, we bring you Rework, formerly Henry Walton's Labor Review. Tune in every Friday at 6:30 p.m. Real stories that rethink work.